Okay, let's begin. This week is Parshas Bahar. It's a very short parsha. Only one parsha. Normally Bahar and Bechor are connected, but this week we only have one parsha. It's very significant because Bahar is all of Mubidru is about parsha, about the Shemitah and Yovel. This coming year, Tav Shin Ayin Hey, coming year is a Shemitah year. So it's as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us heads up. It's the last time we're going to encounter Shemitah in the Torah, in Kriya Sattar, before the actual Shemitah year. Shemitah, to the best of my knowledge, does not appear in Chumash Devarim. Right? There is no parish. That's more. Okay, I'll take it back then. Okay, so I'm sorry. But this is at least a prelude, a hakdama to what will occur this coming year, and it's given more attention by reading only one parasha, not having a double parasha. We give it the limelight, spotlight, to focus on the mitzvah of Shemitah. And I think as we come towards the end of the year, you're going to be seeing a lot in the news. And you'll hear a lot of talk about in Yonei Shemitah.
They already sent that.
Right. You think, just wait until we get closer to the year. The envelopes will multiply. Will multiply exponentially. You think you received envelopes? Just wait a few more weeks until we come into. Okay, but this is a very important mitzvah, and it appears in Parashas Bahar. We learned yesterday when we were discussing numbers, the number 31. The number 31, we mentioned in Eretz Yisrael, there were 31 kings. When Klal Yisrael conquered Eretz Yisrael, there were 31 kings of Canaan, and Klal Yisrael, they wiped out the 31 kings of Canaan. So we discussed, what's the significance of there being 31 kings? Nothing happens by coincidence. Why were there 31 kings? Why weren't there 10 kings? Why weren't there 50 kings? Why weren't there 100 kings? What is the significance? So it's rooted in a pasuk and in a Maimer Chazal that we say, that appears the last Mishnah Masech Luxin. Many of us hear this often when you go to a Sima Masech Mishnayis, a Shloshim, or Yardside, when you learn Mishnayis. The last Mishnah Masech Luxin says that also HaKadosh Baruch Hu lahanichel l'chol tzadik v'tzadik shai olamos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu would ultimately bequeath to every single tzadik 310 worlds. Something very mystical. What does it mean, 310 worlds? The Gemara says, how do we know this? Lahanchil ohav yesh, I'll bequeath to my beloved yesh, something. Yesh literally means something. The oitzra sema male, and I will fill up their storage houses with benefit. What is the ultimate? Now, the word lahanchil, to bequeath, Yerusha, the word Yerusha primarily is used in reference to land. That's the real. Anytime we say a person was Yerush, he was Yerush Mamon, was Yerush. That's a borrowed term. The real Yerusha is in reference to land. What is the ultimate Yerusha that Kadosh Baruch Hu gives to Klal Yisrael? Eretz Yisrael. And what does the word Yesh literally mean? Substance, existence, substance, essence. In Olam Haba, the essence is Shai Olamos. This world, in this world, where in this world is there the parallel to the essence, to the spirit? Where is there a parallel in the Gashmis world to the spirituality of Olam Ha'ames? Eretz Yisrael. So in Eretz Yisrael, there are 31 centers. The fact that there are 31 kings means there are 31 districts, there are 31 mekoymos in Eretz Yisrael, which correspond to the 310 worlds of Olam Haba that there are for every single tzaddik. 310, the mispar katan of 310 obviously is 31. So there is a parallel. There is yesh in the Olam of Ruchni, and there is yesh in the Olam of Gashmi. And the Olam HaGashmi parallels the Olam HaRuchni. The goal is to connect the Mechaber, the Shemayim Varetz, and that's why the number 31 is, there's a yesh, 310 in Olam HaRuchni. Parallel to that, there are 31 Mekoymos in Eretz Yisrael, which were found in the 31 kings that were conquered, 31 nations, 31 kings that were conquered when Klal Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning this is for two reasons. Number one, I want to remind Chazal that Yesh stands for is Rosh Etevos Yiras Shomayim. It's a very difficult concept. What does a person really accomplish in this world? We have a famous Chazal, Akol Bidei Shamayim, Chutz Miyira Shamayim. The only thing a person really can accomplish is an expression of Yira Shamayim. HaKadosh Baruch will give tzaddikim an opportunity to acquire Yira Shamayim. So when we say Lahanech Le'ohav Ayesh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bequeath to his beloved Yesh, what it really means, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bequeath to tzaddikim opportunities to acquire for themselves madregos in Yira Shamayim. Okay, that's one part. Now, why am I telling you that part? Going over here in different layers is because I came across something new yesterday, that Yesh is Rosh Etevos Yovlos and Shmitos. Lahanche Le'ohav Ayesh. And now we take all of these four ideas together, they all fit perfectly together. What is Eretz Yisrael? Eretz Yisrael is the land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given Klal Yisrael. Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give Klal Yisrael the land to work the land? Well, obviously, Shei Shonim Tizra Sadecha, Shei Shonim Tizmor Kamecha, V'yosavtes Tvosa. But what's the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is V'ashona Hashviyis, Shabbos L'Hashem Elokecha. And then after 7 times 7, we have Yovel. The Kedushas Ha'oretz is intensified, is manifest in Shemitah and Yovel. That's where the Kedusha Sa'aretz is most intensely expressed, where Klal Yisrael does not work the land, and they have emunah pshuta in a Kadosh Baruch Hu that He will provide them with their needs. It's a very difficult concept, and it's something which a Kadosh Baruch Hu demands of us to fulfill, Shemitah and Yovel. And in fact, the pasuk goes on to say in the parish of Yovel, how does the Torah describe this nisayon of being true to the laws of Shemitah and Yovel? It says, the pasuk, let me read the pasuk, Vasisem, pasuk V'losonu Ish Esami. So this is the end of the parasha of Yovel. Yovel doesn't really end just with the 7 year. It talks about all the rules. V'chisim kumim kalamisech. There's no parasha break in this entire section. After it tells you Yovel, it tells you all the laws of returning the field after a number of years. V'chisim kumim kalamisech. Next pasuk, V'mispashonu L'firevashonim V'losonu Ish Esami. So V'yareisa Me'elokecha. The way the pasuk winds down the end of the parasha of Shemitah and Yovel is with an expression of, you're going to need a lot of Yira Shemayim for this. Yira Shemayim. You need Yira Shemayim to be mekayim the laws of Shemitah and Yovel. And Shemitah and Yovel is the Yesh. It corresponds to the Shai Olamos. Osa Kadosh Baruch Hu L'Hanech L'Chol Tzadik B'Tzadik Shai Olamos. 310 spiritual worlds. We mentioned Eretz Yisrael is the physical parallel, the Gashmiyistika parallel of those Shai Olamos. And that's why there are 31 kings. There were 31 kings who occupied the land before we conquered the land. And what is and this land, what is the purpose of conquering this land? It's all to sanctify the land, and the sanctification of the land is achieved with Shemitah and Yovel. And that Shemitah and Yovel is our expression of Yiras Shamayim. Okay, I'm not telling you anything very profound. I just want to show that these four different ideas, these four concepts, all converge. They all synthesize into one concept. There are Shai Olamos, there are 31 kings, Eretz Yisrael is the physical manifestation of the Shai Olamos, and Shai represents Yirah Shamayim, represents Shemitah and Yovel. When we are Mekayim, Shemitah and Yovel, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu requires of us, we are expressing the ultimate form of Yirah Shamayim, we're giving the land its ultimate Kedusha. It is for us the ultimate Yesh, the ultimate essence, the ultimate matter that we have in this world, which parallels the Shai Olamos in the Olam Ho'emes. Yeah.
We have Shemitah, but there's no Yovel. We don't follow Yovel, right?
We, Bizman HaZeh, do not have Yovel. We don't have Yovel, Bizman HaZeh, correct. Because Bizman HaZeh, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. We don't have the majority of Kfar Yisrael is not living in Eretz Yisrael. That's becoming a very big issue today because seemingly we already did.
It also has to be the Chalukah.
It has to be Beis HaMikdash. Al-Admasan. Everyone has to Al-Admasan. Otherwise,
you have 51%. You got to have this.
Everyone living. Okay, there's a lot. There are
so the if the 10 Shvatim were exiled, you
so that's why we can't have that.
But we have the Beis HaMikdash between the 10 Shvatim.
And then when you had, first of all, I don't know. The Shvita was not Yovel was not the right anymore.
Because the majority of Klai Yisrael left. They never came back. Okay, let's go to another idea. The parasha begins. So Rashi has the famous question: My inyan shmitah etzel Har Sinai. Why is the mitzvah of shmitah taught in reference to Har Sinai? Rashi gives the famous answer: Elamash shmitah nemru kililoseha v'diktu keha the klolois and the diktukim misinai. Of kulon, every single one of the mitzvos was also nemru kiloisem v'diktu kehen mi Sinai. What does that mean exactly? Now, let me ask you a more basic question: what are the klolos and what are the diktu kehen? Diktuk. Normally, we would use the word the pratim, the klolos and the pratim. And in fact, in this girsa of Rashi, there's an added word in the middle: mashmita nemru kiloisechu ufrotosecha v'diktu keha. Three. There are three words. The klal, the prat, and the diktukim. But when Rashi concludes, he winds down, even in this girsa that pads the words, he only says, af kulon nemru kililoseyem v'diktu kehen. The word prat is not mentioned. So let's learn use the standard text where it only has two different concepts. A klal and a diktuk. The kililoseyem v'diktu kehen. What exactly does that mean, the diktu kehen? It's a very unusual word. So I don't have a clear answer. There are a lot of questions to give an answer. There's one thing which caught my attention, that the only time in the Torah where the Torah tells us what you're thinking, the Torah gives you a mitzvah. Let's go off the topic. Okay, the Torah gives you a mitzvah. I want you to wear tefillin. I want you to wear tefillin every single day. Shel Yad and Shel Rosh. Tell this to a person. Tell this to a newcomer. Tell it to a person that never put on tefillin his whole life. A tinnik shenishba, a person who converts to yadus, and you tell him, you know, there's a mitzvah of tefillin. So the person says, how often? Every day. Every day. Out of your mind? I can't put on tefillin every single day. Every single day. No, get used to it. Okay. Where do I get them? Oh, you have to go to the store. How much does it cost? $1,000. A good quality pair of tefillin. Then you can buy it for $400, $300. But a good quality pair of tefillin is $1,000. $800.
You're out of
touch. $3,000. $3,000. $1,500. Okay, $1,500.
Made in China.
So the person will say to you, out of your mind, I can't afford this. How do you put on the tefillin? There are many questions. When you are introduced to a mitzvah, a person has many questions. How can I do this mitzvah? I can't afford the mitzvah. How do I do the mitzvah? What are the rules of the mitzvah? There are many questions. Does the Torah tell you answer all of your questions? No. The Torah says, this is it. There's a mitzvah to wear tefillin every single day. Do it. You have a problem. There are practical considerations. You have to go to be at work at a certain point in time, and you can't afford to buy tefillin. You work it out. You figure out a solution for your problems. I'm telling you what the mitzvah is. Torah gives us this week's parasha, mitzvah of Shemitah. The seventh year, you're not allowed to work the land. The land has to remain fallow. So, if we would not read the parasha, we would say, really? What's going to be during the seventh year? It's going to be the seventh year, and we're not allowed to work the land. How are we going to make parnassah the seventh year? So if the Torah would not tell us anything, what we would say, well, it's no different than any other of the Tayag mitzvahs. You got a problem? You figure out a solution. Let's talk about Shabbos. Okay, put about better is Shabbos. Shabbos, you're not allowed to work. You're not allowed to work. If you get paid by the day and you're on a fixed salary, how are you expected to live on Shabbos? You have to make parnassah. If you make enough money, if a person is in a situation where he makes enough money, just enough money, his labor to buy dinner or to buy lunch, and on Shabbos he does not go to work, how does a person expect to make parnassah in order to eat it? So Torah doesn't tell you what to do. Torah says figure it out. Get a job where they'll pay you enough on Friday that you'll have be able to take over for Shabbos, you'll have food for Shabbos. The Torah doesn't tell you, don't worry, you'll make enough money during the first 6 days of the week to put away money, you'll have for Shabbos. Figure it out. Suddenly, when it comes to the midst of Shemitah, the Torah says, and if you're going to and Hashem says, don't worry, why all of a sudden did the Torah tell us what we're thinking and the Torah tell us a solution? This is unique to the parsha of Shemitah. This, perhaps, al derech drush, is what Rashi is telling us. Shemitah, the Torah taught us the klolos. The klolos means the rules. The klolos are the general rules. And it told us the diktu kehen. The diktu kehen is an unusual word. Doesn't mean if we would say the word the protein, that means the fine points of the halacha. The diktu kehen has a connotation, perhaps, opposition. People are medakti. You all hear we down for the yom there. People are medaktik. People, they criticize. They critique. The word diktu has a connotation, a person's reaction. The Torah tells you the rules, the klolosim, I can't pronounce the word, the klolos. The Torah is telling you the general rules, the klolim, and then the Torah tells us the diktukim. The diktukim don't mean the fine points. It means the critique of the mitzvah. People, what? This is how you're telling us the mitzvah? That's right. And the Torah tells you how to deal. That's right. Don't worry. Don't worry. Have faith. You'll survive. This is the Musar Haskel for all the mitzvahs. All of the mitzvahs, every single one of the Tayag mitzvahs besides Shemitah, there are no diktukim. The Torah does not tell us man's reaction. We can't eat milk and meat. We can't do this, we can't do that. Every single mitzvah, you'll always hear people complain. There's no such thing. You'll always hear complaints. But the Torah doesn't tell you about the complaints. Too bad. Don't complain. Figure out how to do the mitzvah. You'll work out the solution. And maybe a person will reach the conclusion that if I have a problem, I have a legitimate concern. If I have a problem, I'm exempt. If you have an issue with a certain mitzvah, the Torah tells you you can't eat non-kosher, and I have nothing else to eat, so maybe it's a legitimate complaint. Maybe I'm allowed to eat non-kosher. No. There is one mitzvah that was given me, Sinai. And the mitzvah was Shemitah. And the Torah gave you the klolim and the diktukim. And the Torah told you how to address. And there's no mitzvah that has more difficulty, that's more difficult to fulfill. This is the ultimate mitzvah. A whole year without parnassah. There is no mitzvah that comes to this mitzvah. A whole year not to have parnassah. And Hashem said, I know what you're thinking. And I'm going to tell you not to worry. Just like it's true with regard to Shemitah, it's the same thing with regard to every other mitzvah. No excuses. No, I'm telling you the mitzvahs, you got a problem with it? You figure out a solution. I'm not going to go through the thought process for every single one of Tayag mitzvahs. I'm just giving you one mitzvah. I'm giving you the thought process for this particular mitzvah, which is very difficult. I'm going to give you the response, and you can use this as a marshal, a paradigm for Tayag mitzvahs. No complaints. No diktukim. I don't want anyone sitting backseat drivers or anyone some critiquing my mitzvahs. You have to do the mitzvahs whether you like them or not. Okay, that's one idea. Now let's go to another idea. This idea I saw expressed by many commentators, but the one that says it the best is the Chassam Sofer, because he adds in a knetch into the Vat. And then I want to follow it up with what with an idea, with one little small addition from the Nusach HaTzfilah, or at least a raw thought, which perhaps you can develop on your own. After we learn about the mitzvah of Shemitah, the Torah tells us the thought process. V'chi Saymar. Okay, let's go to the Psukim. Pasuk says, Pasuk Yutas. I'm going to. Let's go to Pasuk Yudches. The beginning of Perik Chav Hei Pasuk Yudches. Va'asisem eschukosai v'es mishpotai tishmeru va'asisem otsam v'ishavtem al oretz levetach. This really is the conclusion of the parasha of Shemitah and Yovel. So I'm told the Shemitah and Yovel, you do what I tell you to do. 7th year, do not work the land. The 50th year, do not work the land. Everyone shall go home free. And if you'll do so, you will be blessed. You will dwell upon the earth in safety and security. V'nos naretz piria, v'achaltem l'sova, v'shavtem l'vetach olecha, there will be peace and security. L'vetach olecha. Olecha. Now, pasuk chaf, v'chi soimru, if you'll say, ma'noichal v'ashona hashviyis, hey lo'y nizhv lo'y nesav estfuoseinu, Hashem says, don't worry, v'tzivis yis b'ruchos yilochen v'ashona hashishis, v'yosos es hatfuo l'shloish hashonim. Don't worry, the land will produce enough for 3 years. For the 6th year, the 7th year, and the 8th year, since you've not planted in the 7th year, what do you need in the 8th year? You'll have enough for the 8th year until you get going once again. Okay, so now the question, then the pasuk goes further and says, v'zrat.
What do you mean the chisomanachoba? You know what you can eat in the 7th year, what you planted in the 6th year.
Yeah.
Says what you will say in the 7th year.
Also, when, that's another question.
In
when
the
are you?
7th year, you're going to say, what am I going to eat next year?
When are you asking the question? Are you asking the question the 6th year or in the 7th? That's a discussion. So many want to say
in the 7th year what you did in the 6th year.
Some of our shalom you're going to say in the 6th year because it's like Katani Amana. Even though now you have plenty of food, you think of the future. You're getting nervous already.
7th year, you say, what am I going to eat next year?
Next year, 8th year. Okay.
Is right. You plant this year.
Different interpretations of exactly when you can ask the question. But the Chasam Sofer says basically the Chasam Sofer, many of the Farshim basically say the same Yisod is there are two different levels of two different madrigos of emuna. A person on a higher level doesn't even ask the question. He doesn't ask the question, and because he does not ask the question, the earth does not produce Hashem. You don't trouble Hashem to force the land to produce more than normally would. In the 6th year. If you don't ask the question, do you know how much produce the earth will produce? Just enough for 1 year. Enough for 1 year? What's going to be in year 7 and year 8? If you don't ask the question and you have full faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the amount that the earth produced in the 6th year will be enough for year 6, 7, and 8. It's a higher madrega. If you are miketani amona, if a person chas shalom is not holding on the higher madrega, where he's not worried, but he is worried, then Hashem says, "You worried? Okay, I'll take care of you. I'm going to do something unusual, but you're forcing my hand. It's not a mila. You're forcing my hand. I've made a request. I've asked you not to work the land in year 7." And you're nervous, okay? So you know what? I guarantee a bracha, year 6 will produce triple of what it normally would produce. It will produce for 6, 7, and 8. But the point is, if you wouldn't ask the question, meaning if you would be a Baal Madrega and have faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if he told you not to work the land year 7, then don't worry. Year 6 will produce the normal amount, and that normal amount will suffice for 6, 7, 8. Just like we have by the Lechem Aponim, and we have by the Omer, when they distributed to the Kehanim, everyone got a teeny little amount. They have a Lechem Aponim. Many Kehanim come together to take the Lechem Aponim. There was some Kehanim, the amount that you got was a mashuhu, and yet that small mashu satisfied you. You were full. You couldn't need a drop more. It was so rich, the taste and the bracha that was found within the small teeny mashu was so great, you were fully satisfied. That is the ultimate bracha. So here we have the Chasam Sofer and many others, they tell us that this pasuk. The average person thinks v'tzivisius baruchas v'ruchas v'lachem hashana hashish atzam maila. It goes to show the hashkach v'kadosh baruch hu that we're going to observe his mitzvos and he's going to do for us unusual things. It's not a maila. This is a sad pasuk. It shouldn't come to a point where a person is miketani amana and he questions Hashem's ways. Hashem, what do you want from me? I'm not going to go out and make a parnasa. You're telling me not to work the land in the seventh year? It's not a maila. Have faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you'll discover that a small amount will suffice for 3 years. If you're not holding on that madrega and you're going to ask the question, you're going to say v'chitzoymar manoicha b'ashona hashviyis, okay, don't worry, I'm going to provide for you bracha v'tzivis v'zbrachas ilochem b'ashona hashishis v'yassasvu l'shloish hashone. Now, that is a vart from the Chassam Sofer, a vart from many commentators. But the Chassam Sofer adds a very, very powerful addition. Before you ask the question, if you are holding on the higher level of faith and don't ask questions, and the earth only produces what it would normally produce, and the bracha will be that that small amount will suffice for 3 years, the pasuk includes Vishavtem al ha'aretz lavetach. You live on the land in a state of security. And again, it repeats Vinas na'aretz piria, the earth will produce its piria. How much piria? Just a normal amount. The normal amount, 1 year's worth. And guess what? That 1 year's produce, v'achaltem lo sova, will satisfy you for many years. V'shavtem lo vetach olecha. You will dwell on the land in security. But let's say you're not holding on that madrega, and the chisor manuach b'ashana hashviyis hein lo inizul lomnes v'stuvos tein v'tzvi tzviyos l'chem ashana shishis. Okay, I'll go and I'll be osa tfulish l'shashanim. But there's a downside. You know what the downside is? V'ha'aretz. The pasuk concludes lo simocher litzmisus. During the land will not be sold for forever. Ki li ha'aretz. Ki gerim v'soshavim atem imadi. You are gerim and soshavim with me. It's my land. If you're not holding on a madrega of not asking questions, you're on the lower madrega where you're asking questions and you're forcing me to do for you unusual things, you're going to suffer the consequences. I know what the consequences are. You're going to come to a realization during those 3 years that you're just Geirim v'soshavim. You're not living on the land lavetach. You're going to come to realize it's not your land, it's my land. That's the trade-off. The trade-off is not just, when you ask the questions, it shows you miketane amana. You lack faith. You lack faith, you're afraid that the small amount you have is not going to suffice for 3 years. You're forcing me to produce triple what it normally would produce. There's another consequence. You're not going to feel security living in Eretz Yisrael. You're going to feel only as if you're gerim v'soshavim. I'm just a guest in the land. Who does the land belong to? Kili ha'aretz. It's Hashem's land. That's in contrast to the first psukim, where the land will only produce exactly what it produces in a regular year, and you have faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the pasuk there says that v'shavtem levetach olecha. You'll live there with security. You'll feel safe and secure. So it's an amazing insight into the pasuk. The pasuk is telling us that the more faith you have, it's not just that you have more faith. You have more Yishuv Hadas in Eretz Yisrael. It's a contradiction. How could I have more Yishuv Hadas? The earth only produces enough produce for 1 year. I literally don't have what to eat next year and the year after. Yet, the pasuk guarantees you live in a state of security. But if you lack faith, if you're lacking faith, even though the stockpiles are full, the prices are cheap, but the quality of life is not the same. Your quality of life is such that you're only gerim v'soshavim ba'aretz. You don't feel a sense of security in the land.
It says Hashemayim Shemayim Hashem Ba'aretz Lasalim Le'odom. So no matter, it seems to be that no matter what you do, it belongs to you.
but it's a different frame of mind. It's a different attitude, a different sense of security. You can live in the lin, you feel secure. A person goes to sleep at night. Is he afraid that someone's going to break into his home and rob him? If you have a muna, you're not afraid. You sleep peacefully. If a person is afraid, then you can't sleep at night. That's what it says. If you're living in the lin with a muna, even though you don't have what to eat, v'shavtem levetach baretz.
Gives kind of
neighbor.
So in other words, you could translate what you just said into that thought.
Okay.
If you have
emunah,
then
the Jew ever move out of the status of Ger and Tosha?
Only when you are in a frame of mind.
Hashem says it's my land, you're a Ger, Tosha,
when you restore your faith. When you restore your faith and you don't ask questions. There are two different madrigals. There's the first madriga and the second madriga. I want to just add to this, we have a bracha in Shemona Esrei. The ninth bracha of Shemona Esrei is the bracha Barech Aleinu Hashem Elokeinu Es Hashana Hazos. Parnasa. We're mispalu for the bracha of Eretz Shal, the Sabeinu Mituva, according to one of the Yersos, Me'achadosh Baruch Hu, satisfy us here in Chutz Eretz from the good of Eretz Yisrael. The ninth bracha of Shemona Esrei is where we are mispalu for the success, the gashmiistic success of Eretz Yisrael. And I also saw it noted that Parshas Behar, it's not a coincidence, is the ninth parsha of Toras Kohanim, of Chumash Vayikra. This week we're going through the ninth parasha. The bracha, Baruch Aleinu, is the ninth bracha of Shemona Esrei. It's not a coincidence that they're both the ninth, because the ninth parasha in the center of the Torah corresponds to the ninth bracha of Shemona Esrei. We will be mispalel for the bracha of the Aretz. Now, there seems to be repetition in the bracha of Baruch Aleinu. What's the bracha? Baruch Aleinu Hashem Elokeinu Es Hashana Hazos. The S kol mine sivua sol letova. If the bracha would stop there, would you be satisfied? Baruch atah Hashem levarech hashanim. Would you be satisfied? Why not? It's a beautiful bracha. Baruch aleinu Hashem lokeinu hashana hazos. The S kol mine sivua sol letova. But the bracha doesn't end there. The bracha repeats itself. The same bracha al pinei ho'adama. V'sabeinu mituva uvarech shenoseinu kashanim hatovos. So the question is, why is there repetition in the bracha of Baruch Aleinu? Why are we saying basically the same thing twice? So perhaps we can suggest, based upon this idea from the Chassam Sofer, that there are two different brachos in Eretz Yisrael. If you are on a higher madrega, a higher level of emunah, all you need to survive is just a small amount. Even though, according to your accountant, the small amount that you have coming in will not suffice to pay for all of your needs, somehow, a person on a very high level of faith can do a lot with a little. A person who was on a lower level of faith, listen, I don't have what to eat. If I'm not going to work the land in the seventh year, I'm not going to have what to eat in year 7 and year 8. Hashem says, don't worry. I will provide a lot to make you satisfied. But it's not the same level of emunah. If you're already asking questions, it's already not the same. In the bracha Baruch Aleinu, we take into account both different groups of people. The group who is on a lower level of faith and the group who is on a higher level of faith. The first half of the bracha, Baruch Aleinu, represents the first group who is on the higher level of faith. Baruch Aleinu Hashem Elokeinu Es Hashana Hazos V'es Kol Mine Sivua Asa L'Tova. Period. Then when we go to the second half of the bracha, the same baruch al pnei ha'adam v'sabeinu mituva uvareich shenoseinu, may you bless, now this is a drush, may you bless shenoseinu, our year, kashanim hatovos. Now literally that means, the simple interpretation is, may this year be like the good old days. What are we referring to? There are many interpretations of Chazal, what we're referring to. But if you study history, there were different tkufos in history where things were very good, where Klal Yisrael was successful, where Parnasa was easy. So may this particular year, the year of Tav Shin Ayin Dalid, may it be like, let's make believe, the years of the Avos. Those years when the Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, let's say during those 15 years when their lives overlapped, there was a shef of bracha of Ayizra, Yitzchak, Ba'aretz, Sayim, Sameh, Sharim. This year should be like the good old days. That is the simple interpretation. But al derech Jewish, what does it mean? Uvarech shenaseinu, may this one year produce equivalent to multiple years. Uvarech shenaseinu, may our year be equivalent Kashonim hatovos. May the amount that we produce, that we succeed in this one year, be equivalent to what we normally produce in 3 years. When do we have such a bracha in the? Where do we find such a bracha in the Torah? Shmita. V'chisoymru bashana. You're going to ask the question. So Hashem says, guess what? 1 year will produce the equivalent of 3 years. But the Chasam Sofer says, that's not a maila. That is something which we need to come on to, because most of us are not on a madrega where we can survive on a small amount. It's not an ideal, but it's a reality. But it's not an ideal. And because we're not holding at that ideal, we're going to pay for it. We're not going to feel secure in the lin. We're only going to feel as if we're gerim v'soshavim, ki li haaretz. If you want a higher madrega, where you're able to survive on a smaller amount, then you would be v'shaftem levet acholecha. These two madregos are hinted to in the two halves of the bracha of Baruch Aleinu. The first half of the bracha, Baruch Aleinu, Hashem Elokeinu, Es Hashanah Hazos. This year, V'yes kol minei sivu asa l'tova. And we're happy. We're happy. Whatever you give us, we're happy. We'll survive. We have faith in you. You've created us. You put us in this world. Whatever will be, will be. We're happy people. We'll survive whatever we have. We'll get by. But let's say there's a person that's not holding on that madrega. I'm worried. And that's why I'm coming to daven. I'm only human. I don't have a parnasa. I have children. I have to feed them. I have tuition. All these things. What am I going to do? Okay, if you're not holding on that madrega, I understand. There's a solution for you also. The same, we repeat the bracha, Ola Nochamal. The same bracha is repeated with different words. But the repetition, this second half of the bracha that should be repeated with different words, is coming to express the second half of the parasha Shemitah. The same bracha Hashem al Pnei Ho'adama, V'sabeinu. I just don't want you to send bracha. I want to be satisfied on my terms. Being satisfied, we didn't have that word in the beginning of the bracha. Satisfied on my words means I don't have faith. I have to fill up my stockpiles. I have to fill up the bank. The bank has to be filled with money. V'sabeinu mito uvarech shenoseinu l'ul drush, and bless this 1 year, kashonim, has to be equivalent to what I would normally be able to acquire in multiple years. Drush, kashonim hatonos.
Varech Shana
Seinu,
though, is not singular.
Shana Seinu
is plural.
No, it means everyone, but it means our. It means every. Varech Shana Seinu.
Individually.
Our year. Varech Shana Seinu. Our year. It means this particular year. This year, may it be like Kashonim. The amount that we should produce in this 1 year should be equivalent to. What we produce in this year should be equivalent to what we normally would take years to produce. It's exactly what it says here in this parasha. V'chisoymru! Don't worry. 1 year will be equivalent to 3 years. But that's not a madrega. That's a lower madrega. It's a reality. Who's on a madrega to say that you can survive with just the bare bones? But we have to at least have ideals. Although in life, rarely do we live an ideal life, but at least we have to have the ideals in front of us. It fits very well into the bracha. To the bracha is repetition, it's not repetition. The two halves of the bracha, the first half is the first madrega, and the second half is the second madrega. There's a mahalach to understand, to make sense of the bracha.
So Kitesh and Bahar is the first madrega.
Pasuk Yutes, the first. No, really, it's Pasuk. Yes, Pasuk Yutes is the first madrega. V'nasana ha'aretz pirya. It will produce its fruit. How much will it produce in year 6? Average. Nothing special. Nothing special. Just barely enough to survive for 1 year. V'achaltem l'sova. And you'll be satisfied. You'll be satisfied with the small amount that you have. You'll be satisfied. But how am I going to survive the next year and the next year? Don't worry. Just like when they ate the lechem apanim, they ate a teeny little fraction and they were satisfied, Hashem will get you by. And if you'll do this, you'll have the ultimate satisfaction, the ultimate bracha, v'shavtem levetach olecha. You'll live in the land with security. But if you're not holding on that madrega, v'chisoy b'manoicha b'ashana hashviyis, what's going to be? Hey, loy nizrav, loy nesef, estiloseinu. For you, on a lower madrega, I also have a solution. V'tzivis, yes, b'ruchasi, lecha b'ashana hashishis, yasas, tzvul, l'shosh hashanim. But there's a consequence. The consequence is v'yare, you're going to know it's my land. You're only going to be a guest in this land. And these two ideas fit, I think, well, or to some degree, they can be inserted into the bracha of Borei Choleinu. Okay, let's go to another idea. We have in this week's parasha the Yovel. In Yovel, the shofar is blown. Ukrosem dror ba'aretz lechol yoyshveha yoyvel hi tiyeh lechem v'shavtem ish el achuz osov ish el mishpachot hoshuvu. And Yovel is ushered in through the blowing of the shofar. V'havarta shofar tiruah b'chodesh hashvi. What in the world does the shofar have to do with Yovel? The 50th year, everyone is going home. Ish el mishpachot hoshuvu. And they will announce this event with the blowing of the shofar. What's going on? The only other time we blow the shofar is on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, at a time of war, we don't blow a shofar, we blow the chatzitzras, trumpets. But the only time we blow a shofar is on Rosh Hashanah. And Chazal go great lengths to tell us the reason why we blow the shofar is zecher for the Akedah. Right, the Akedah, Zuchus Avraham, and now it's Yovel blowing the shofar again. The Akedah has nothing to do with Yovel. What's going on? What? Yovel means shofar, but why do you blow the shofar? You blow the shofar, and Rosh Hashanah, Chazal, what are you blowing the shofar for? In order I should remember the Akedah. You take the ayah, the horn of the ram, it's the Eloi Shel Yitzchak, and I'll remember the Akedah will be a Zuchus. But what does the shofar have to do with Yovel? So I don't have a good answer. But I want to make a final observation. Nothing very deep. A simple observation which a little bit can at least an achiza on why we blow the shofar. The truth is, when we blow the shofar, What do we blow? Do we blow a tkiah, a shvarim, a shvarim teruah? What's the seder of blowing the shofar? So the Gemara says, well, we don't really know. It's not really clear. And this is true when it comes to the shofar by Rosh Hashanah. And after the discussion, the Gemara says, we know how to blow the shofar from Yovel, because the targum of a havarta shofar teruah, the word for teruah is yababa. Right. Targum Unkelis, Targum Yonasan, says that the translation of teruah is a yababa. Where in Tanakh do we find the concept of yababa? The mother of Sisera. Sisera was the general, was a Rasha. He was a general of Melech Yavin Melech Kenan, one of the Canaanite nations. He was the general, and he went to war against Klal Yisrael. And he went out to war with 900 chariots. Paro went out only with 600 chariots. He went out to wage war against Klal Yisrael with 900 chariots. And he drowned in the Yam, in the sea. The whole story of his death, Yav Melchanan, Devorah, the whole we know the whole story from the Haftarah. Sisera was the general. Yav was the king, and Sisera was his general. And Sisera went out to battle with 900 chariots. When he went out to battle with his chariots, he said goodbye to his mother. On his way out, he said, "Mom, it's Mother's Day. You're an okay mom. You're an okay mom. I saw a present. You bought a mug. The most okay. What was the nusach? The most
okayest.
okayest. Such a crazy missile. The most okayest man in the world.
Okay.
You're just okay. Invented some word. Oh, the most okayest man in the world. Buy a mug for your mom. So he said, "Mom, I'll be back Sunday with flowers. 1-800-Flowers. I'll be back Monday. I'm going out to battle. I'm going to bring you back a present from the battlefield." That's what he said to his mom. That's what he said. He goes to battle. He goes out to battle, and his mother senses something is wrong. Something is not right. It comes time when he should come back. It's Mother's Day, and he's not there. His mother knows something is wrong, and his mother begins to cry. And the words of the pasuk are something along the lines, "Vatiyabe, vatiyabe be'em Sisra." The mother of Sisra cried, "Ba'ad hachaloyin b'ad ho'eshnov," in the window, and her words were, "Madua boshesh richbo lavo." Why is his chariot has it delayed? Madua boshesh richbo lavo. Why has he not returned home? And the pasuk goes on. There are a few different expressions. In Shiras Devorah, she refers to this event that the mother of Sisra was crying out of the window. Why has my son he has not hesitated to return home? This was her cry. It's very interesting that this cry, the mother of Sisra, she cried for her child, is the cry that the Torah references us to use for the kia, the sound that we blow on Rosh Hashanah. It's a very difficult concept because this was no tzaddikus, and Sisra was no tzaddik. He was a Rosh Merusha. He wanted to annihilate Klal Yisrael. His mother was certainly wasn't a tzaddikus, but yet obviously the Torah felt that the cry a mother has for a child is unparalleled. We find this by the Kohen Gadol, who's the one that brings the gifts, it's mentioned many times, the gifts, the mother. A mother has a special relationship with a child. And when a mother senses her child is, that something is wrong, the child is suffering, the cry a mother gives forth is unique. There is no pain in this world that a mother, like the pain that a mother has for a child. And if when I told Kadosh Baruch Hu told us on a Rosh Hashanah, it's a Yom Hadin, a Yom HaZikaron, and you need Zuchusim, you have to cry to a Kadosh Baruch Hu like a mother cries for a child. Although, unfortunately, the way the source that we use to bring out this concept is a source where a wicked mother is crying over the loss of a wicked son, yet the concept is true, the cry a mother has for her child. What?
No, I'm saying there's other places where a mother cried for Rachel.
But that's a later point in time. That was after Torah was given. That was not an example that. Well, you tell me that Sisra was also after Torah was given. It's a very good point. Okay, I hear the question. Hagar for Yishmael. Hagar, which her cry was a cry of she was miyayish. She was guilty. She abandoned her child. Whereas the mother of Sisra, either she didn't abandon. She yearned for the return, for the restoration. Someone has said that the cry of the mother of Sisra really is really a reference to the cry that Sarah Imenu cried over Yitzchak when she heard that Yitzchak was brought to the Akedah. She cried and she died. So it's really a reference point to trigger the cry of Sarah over Yitzchak. But in any event, the simple understanding is that there is a Gemara, Perish Gemara, that Yabe b'im Sisra, the cry the mother has for a child. That's what we're using for reference for Rosh Hashanah. Now take that to Yom Kippur. Now things, I think, they make a little bit more sense. What was the mother crying for? The mother was crying, "I want my child to come home. Come home, return. Come back to your mother. Come back to your family. Come back to your land." What happens on Yovel? V'shavtem ish el achuzaso, the ish el mishpachto tashuvu, to return home. Now we have some sense of why we're blowing a shofar on Yovel. Yovel is the zman of return, where slaves are freed, where land is returned back to its ancestors. It's a zman of return. Where in Tanakh do we have an expression, a trigger to remind the tsar of being distant? the mother of Yisra, the mother of Sisra. The mother of Sisra yearned for the return. Now it's also it sheds light on the parsha of Yovel differently, because normally when you think of Yovel, what do you think about? The slave wants to return. The slave, Eved Kanani, Eved Ivri, even during the 6 years he goes free, or Eved Kanani goes free. Eved Kanani goes free. Yovel, sure. Niritza, all different slaves go free. You think the slave wants to go free? Not necessarily. The slave doesn't really. The slave sold himself. When the slave is a Niritza, the family misses him. When you think about Yovel, who has the great simcha at the time of Yovel? Is it the individual who's returning home, or is it his family? Society is happy that this person who has been suffering all these years now has been restored to his source. The field that was now in the possession of a foreign family, of a distant family, now the family, this family, the mishpacha, they now have menucha. Oh, our ancestral plot has been restored to us. When we look at the mother of Sisra, the primary tsar is not Sisra. The primary tsar is from the perspective of Sisra's mother. She wanted her son to return home. When we think about Yovel, the great simcha, krosim d'ror b'aretz, v'shaftem ish elach uzasu, it's a great celebration that everyone is going back. Who is the celebration for? Is it a celebration for the slave? Well, that's yes, it is for the slave. But it's also a celebration for the family, for the society, that things now have been finally restored to where they were before. Okay.
Is there a reason you blow it on Yom Kippur, though? I never understood that. What's that? Why not Rosh
Hashanah? Why on Yom Kippur? I don't know. Right. No, Yovel begins in Rosh. Yovel begins in Yom Kippur, not in Rosh Hashanah. Yovel begins in Yom Kippur. Okay, let me just conclude one.
They stop working
on Rosh Hashanah. They stop working. They don't actually go free. There's a hakir that says they go retroactively. They go free. They wait until Yom Kippur. And there's such a sheet. I think in the Achron, and then go Lamafre. They go free in Rosh Hashanah. I don't know the answer. No. So one very just one.
That's a general question.
What?
No, blowing shofar the end of Yom Kippur.
Blowing shofar the end. That's what we do with Zanazel. The reason why we blow shofar the end of Yom Kippur is Zecher for Yovel. The Zecher for Yovel. Yeah, even though Yovel is more than 50 years, since we don't have any Yovel altogether, every single year we do a Zecher for Yovel. Okay, one thing with one was short from Rav Shrab. Rav Shrab says, we have this parasha, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. In the parasha of Ribbis, Hashem tells us, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. I am Hashem your guard, if you raise him Elokecha. Parasha of Ribbis, there is an Indian of Yira Shemayim, and Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Every single day, twice a day, when we recite Shemon Esrei, we say Ani, we say Hashem Elokeichem Enes. The question is, why do we connect? You're not allowed to be mafsik between Hashem Elokeichem and the word Enes. Why are we so makbid for there not be a hefsek? So the answer is the pasuk. It's the pasuk in Yecheskel. Hashem Elokeichem Enes, being that it's a pasuk, so that's when we put the words together. But that's not a full-fledged answer, because it says in the Torah many times, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. It doesn't say Enes next to the word Hashem Elokeichem. So what's the depth in connecting Hashem Elokeichem Enes? So Rav Shrab says we can understand this from a pasuk in this week's parasha, together with a pasuk in Parashas Kedoshim, and a pasuk in Parsha Shlach. There are three times in the Torah where it says Ani Hashem Elokeichem, and all three times, look up all these psukim, is Hashem says. Rashi reminds us of what happened in Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim, Hashem says, "I was mafchin bein tiba she'ena shel bechor letiba shel bechor." At the time of Makas Bechoros, all the firstborns of all Egyptian firstborns were killed. And no one, there were no records who exactly is the firstborn. It's impossible to tell, is this the firstborn? Hashem says, I know who the firstborns are. And this was the miracle of Makas Bechoros. Hashem revealed who the firstborns were. In this week's parasha, when it comes to Ribbis, we have a very interesting halacha. You're not allowed to lend ribbis to a Jew, but you are mechuyif to lend ribbis to a guy. And Rashi here, we don't have time out of time, Rashi makes the following point. When a person lends money to a Jew, he's very tempted to lend him ribbis. And he has a very easy excuse. He'll never get caught. Because anytime someone will audit his books, his records, and they'll see that he lent money and he got back more than he lent, he always can say that came from a guy. This Rashi and the Chumash. Rashi, I guess they didn't have QuickBooks in those days, so he couldn't really see who the money went to. But in the olden days, all you looked at on the accounting books was you let your money goes out, money comes in. How could it possibly that more money is coming in than it went out on a loan? A goy, because the Torah says explicitly, a Jew you're not allowed to lend ribbis, but a goy you have a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah. When you lend money to a guy, you mechuyev to lend him the money with ribbis. So therefore, Rashi makes the following point. It's very easy to be nichshol in the laws of ribbis, because all you have to do is say the reason why you have received more money than what you have lent is because you gave the money to a guy. And a guy, l'chatchila, you're allowed, you mechuyev to give ribbis. Rashi says, it's right, no one knows. No one knows this. It's impossible for anyone to find this out. You have a very easy excuse, very easy. But I know. I know the truth. Ani Hashem Elokeichem. I am Hashem, your God. And in pasuk over here it says, "Who took you out of Mitzrayim?" In pasuk Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Hashem Tzitzisrael. We have a similar expression. I took you out of the land of Canaan, and therefore watch out. Just like in Mitzrayim, I know. In Mitzrayim, I know who the Bechor was, who was not a Bechor, and there I show that I know the MS. So too, when it comes to ribbis, don't be a faker. Even though it's very easy and you won't get caught, don't be a faker. Rashi says exactly the same principle with regard to tzitzis. Tzitzis, we mechuyev to have tchelis. And there's something called kol ilan. There's a dye that is 100% identical to tchelis, and no one can catch you. It's chemically a clone of tchelis, and no one can catch you. Hashem says, watch out. And the Hashem will just like in Egypt, I knew who the firstborns were, who were not the firstborns. I'll catch you when it comes to Tchelas, the third place in Parshas Kedoshim, where a person has weights, and a person can take a weight, they can dip it, can soak it in salt, and by soaking in salt you can change its weight, and no one will catch you. It's impossible to be caught. There in Rashi in Kedoshim, the pasuk says, "Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Hashem Tzitzisrael Eretz Mitzrayim." Just like in Mitzrayim, I know who the firstborn was and who was not a firstborn. I know the MS. I'll catch you here as well. So we have three different examples in Chumash, weights in Parshas Kedoshim, in Parshas Shlach, Parshas Tzitzis, and Parshas Bahar, the Parsha of Ribbis. It's very easy to get away with it, and you can get away with it. Yet Hashem says, "Ani Hashem Elokeichem, who took you out of Mitzrayim." And Rashi, in all three places, references Mitzrayim, where Hashem was Megala Emes. I know who the firstborn was, and know who was not the firstborn. Rav Schwab says something fascinating. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Avram, to Moshe, and Hashem said to Moshe, "Moshe, you know Avram. You know Kennedy. you know Avram."
Three says,
yeah.
That's the sixth time.
No, maybe I'm making a mistake.
The sixth time.
And the Yashem Lokechem? No, in reference, and the Yashem Lokechem in Mitzrayim. Who took you out of Mitzrayim. And the Yashem Lokechem took you out of Mitzrayim. So Hashem says to Moshe, "You know Kennedy. You know Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Why not? They, I was not Megala b'mida amita sheli. There I revealed b'kel shakai u'shmi Hashem. But you, Moshe, your tafkid is to be shmi Hashem yudkei vavkei midas amita sheli. What was the conclusion of Yitzias Mitzrayim? Makas b'choros. Rav Shrav says, look at this. What is the essence of Makas b'choros? The essence, the climax of Makas Bechoros was where Midas Amita Shali, Hashem revealed, "I know who the firstborns are. It's a secret that no one knows, only I know. I was able to reveal which person was a Tiba, was a Bechor, which was not a Tiba Shal Bechor." And this Rashi uses a springboard, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, just like I took you out of Mitzrayim. That was the climax of Yitzias Mitzrayim, to go from Kel Shakai to Yudkei Vavkei, to recognize Amidas Amidas Shali. So too, when it comes to this Mitzvah, is to recognize the Midah of Amidas Shali. Therefore, now Rav Shraf, we understand why it's critical when we say Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Tseis Yeschem, May Eretz Mitzrayim. When you connect those two concepts, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Tseis Yeschem, May Eretz Mitzrayim, you must connect it to the word Emes. Because since these three words, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, who took you out of Mitzrayim, are found in the Torah three places, in Tzitzis, that's where this pasuk is, and Parashas Kedoshim, the weights, and Parashas of Ribbis, and all ties back into, and Rashi references Ani Hashem Elokeichem with references to Yitzias Mitzrayim of Emes. It's critical that the concept of Emes be expressed when you say Ani Hashem Elokeichem. It's not just because the pasuk in Yecheskel that says Hashem Elokeichem Emes, but it's also the theme, the concept of this is what the tafkid of Yitzias Mitzrayim was, to be maker the Emes, the Amita Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, have a wonderful Shabbos.
Thank you, Rabbi.
You want to say Kaddish? I'm going to say Kaddish.